a borrowed plot, cabin top planters, and a floating greenhouse in tow. This is not your typical nursery setup.
So, Julie is like a little tender, a small boat. I have a rope attached to my narrow boat, and I am towing her behind me. And I had this mix of feelings of like being nervous, but also really excited, because I was like, if it's going to work, it's going to be amazing. For the first 2 years, every time I could see the first baths, I would literally cry.
Today, we'll be hearing the inspirational story of Rocker Brings Flowers, a grower and florist who started a wonderful cut flower business without actually owning any dry land of her own. Rocker has built a huge online following for sharing her journey and for being passionately driven by being as resourceful and as sustainable as possible. And from growing imaginatively on a small scale to the grand reimagining of a country estate at the Newt in Somerset, we'll be visiting the stunning colour gardens under the stewardship of Joe Dransfield to hear how a monochrome approach to flowers can deliver dazzling impact. All of this coming up in today's episode of Gardening with the RHS with me, Guy Barter. But first, we begin with another round of veg growing tips and tricks. We're off to RHS Garden Wisley to meet with Liz Mooney, who works in the World Food Garden.
I just love Grow Your Own. It just gets me so excited because you can eat the produce. I mean, what's better than that? And I'm really passionate about wanting to have local food, sustainable food, healthy food, because so much of what is out there, you don't really know its provenance. You don't know. Maybe the farmers use chemicals on it. Maybe it's come from New Zealand and it's not in season and it's been wrapped in plastic. And there are all of these hidden environmental and sustainability consequences to our food that you just avoid, you just get past if you've grown your own, because anything you've grown yourself is something that hasn't got those food miles. You know it hasn't been sprayed in chemicals. You know it's just really good and healthy for you. And also, the fresher food is, the closer you eat it to harvest, the more nutritious it is, because a lot of these crops, as they're stored, they will degrade and they will start to lose their nutrition. But again, if you can just eat fresh, it's healthier food for you. And I personally am self-sufficient in fruit and vegetables, pretty much from my own allotment, but I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. But you don't have to be self-sufficient. That's just me. That's a personal choice I've made. That's something I want to be. And with the RHS, with what we do in the World Food Garden, particularly with what we do here at Wisley, we run our donation stand so we can give our visitors a chance to not just see what we grow, but taste what we grow. And just try and spread all these messages about the importance of growing your own. But it's not just the importance. I love it. I just want to share with you some of my enthusiasm for some of the crops which you can be getting on with growing at the moment. So I was planting peas here at Wisley yesterday. We grow a few different cultivars here, some main crop varieties, but also some sugar snap and some monge too, so you can get that whole range of crops. You can plant peas a bit earlier in the season than this, but I like to let the overwintering crops get their sort of full run of life before you take them out and replace them with a spring crop. So yesterday we removed a load of overwintering mustards, a really good variety called Green in Snow, and replaced them with the peas. So peas take a bit longer to plant than many other crops because they need their supports and their protection, so you can't just plant them and leave them. So we support our peas using coppiced hazel as pea sticks. So we put in some sort of slightly bigger sticks for them to grow up, and you want them to be quite twiggy, so they've got things for the pea tendrils to grasp and grow up. And then we also put a load more brash twiggy bits around the base of these. Partly this is to help the peas get going, but also it's to try and keep off those pesky pigeons who do like to eat your peas for you. We start all of our peas off, most of our peas off, inside the glasshouse, because we have had some problems with rodents going for peas and broad bean seeds. But we find that if they're started off inside, so they've already got reasonable roots by the time of planting, then they're generally fine. The peas I planted yesterday were all what's known as multi-sown. So in the modules we sowed in the glasshouse, instead of having one pea per module, we had three or four. and then we planted them out in those clumps of three or four, and they grow really well up the structures like that. You plant the clumps a little further apart than you would have done if they were individuals. So we had maybe 10, 15 centimetres between our clumps of peas, and then you just leave them to romp away and get growing. One of my favourite cultivars is a pea called Kelvedon Wonder, which is a nice sort of standard podding garden pea. In terms of sugar snap peas, Sugar Bon and Sugar Anne are two really good ones which you can go for. And with Mange too, there's some plain green ones, but if you want to have a go with some fun colours, there's one called Golden Wonder, which is a nice yellow. You can also get purple varieties, so introduce a bit of a range into your garden. Radishes are another crop which you can be growing now in the spring. They do best in the spring or maybe towards the autumn. If you try and do radishes in the summer, you can do them. I have grown them in the summer. But if you get a hot, dry summer, they're very prone to rising to flower before they really form the little salad radish which you're wanting to harvest. So you can sow radishes earlier than this. I've sown radishes as early as February and they've done very well. With the radishes, I do direct sow them. I start the vast majority of my crops off inside the glasshouse in modules. But radishes are so small and they germinate so quickly that the amount of time, effort and the sort of fiddly nature of doing them inside, I find not to be worth it. So I sow them in the ground and they germinate easily within the week at this time of year. I fleece all of my radishes just with standard horticultural fleece, a fairly lightweight. That's not because they need warmth or anything, but there is a little insect called the flea beetle, which is very fond of radishes. And I find if you don't fleece them, the leaves end up looking a bit like lace doilies, and they can, which means the roots don't develop properly, but they can also even go through the roots and you get little sort of brown runs where the babies, the larvae, have eaten into the roots. So I just fleece them to protect them. They'll stay fleeced their whole life, gradually loosening off the fleece as they grow and lifting it off them. I do radishes just by themselves. I create the drills sort of 15 to 20 centimetres apart and then try and thinly sow the radishes along the base. Thinly sowing the seeds is something which you should definitely do, and I am prone to chucking in a couple of extras just because, but all that means is I then have to go and thin them out again. But if you feel like you've got the time to go and thin them out, there's no problem with doing that. I will sometimes use radishes as a row marker for parsnips, because April is quite a good time to be sowing parsnips, and we all know how tricky parsnips can be to germinate, because radishes are so quick to germinate. They act as a sort of marker, showing you where you sowed your parsnip seeds and helping to identify if they've germinated and if they're a parsnip or a weed, which is quite useful. There's a real range of radish cultivars you can get out there. One of my favourites, so it's a pretty new cultivar. I only grew it for the first time last year, but it's called Bright Lights. And you get relatively large radishes out of it, and they come in a range of colours. You know, there you get black, purple, the standard red, white, yellow, and it's just really fun. And when I say they're quite large, I had a few, when I was harvesting them in the garden last year, I had several people go, "Oh, is that a potato?" Because the yellow radish was large enough, they thought that's what it was, but it was a radish. So Bright Lights is a great one. French Breakfast and Scarlet Globe are just your classic radishes. Red, pink skin and the white flesh. But Icicle is another really good one to try. So that's a longer one and it's pure white and it grows really well and it just looks different and fun when you pull it out of the ground. One thing I will say about radishes is if you've only ever eaten shop-bought radishes, you might be expecting something that gives you a nice bit of crunch and a sort of mild, peppery-ish kick to it. If you grow a homegrown radish, the flavour is so much more intense. And it's one of the benefits of growing your own. And radishes is one of the crops where you can really taste the difference between grow your own and the supermarket. A slightly more unusual crop for you is the cardoon. Now, this is a perennial edible. There are lots of advantages to doing perennial in that they are just in the ground the whole time, so their roots are always there, binding the soil together, and soil life really likes having something there the whole time, which can help to support the soil community. You don't have to worry about sowing them every year. Once they're established, they don't need as much watering, so they can get down their good roots. So there are lots of advantages to growing perennials. A cardoon would be very easily mistaken for a globe artichoke. The plant is essentially, they're the same genus as a globe artichoke, very closely related. But they are essentially a bigger version of a globe artichoke. Flower spikes they send up are taller, but the flowers themselves are smaller than a globe artichoke. And unlike a globe artichoke, you don't eat the flower, you eat the fleshy midrib of the young leaves. So as they're starting to come into growth, you take the really young leaves and it's that midrib bit which you can eat. Now, some people will tell you that you want to blanch the leaves as they start growing. So basically, as it starts coming into growth, you wrap the whole thing in cardboard or you could put a rhubarb saucer over the top, something to just try and exclude light to make it a bit sweeter and a bit less stringy. I haven't done that, and I've read varying reports about whether the blanching actually makes a substantial difference. But you harvest it when they're young, and it's a fleshy midrib of those young leaves. And you can use them in quite a range of ways, but the main way is if you want to lightly stir fry it or just very lightly steam it and then mix it into a sauce. It's almost a bit like celery in that it does have that slight stringy nature to it, but it's not, you don't get the same sort of crisp, crunchy texture as you do with celery. And it's just, even if you don't want to be faffed around harvesting it, it's a beautiful architectural plant in the garden that has these flowers which are very similar to a globe artichoke, and they're great for attracting in pollinators. So they are a really fun one to grow. Just one word of warning, if you're growing your cardoon in good soil, like you might well have in your vegetable garden, they get very big. I've just recently lifted and split all of my cardoons in the veg garden and have moved them, so they're basically getting a bed to themselves to stop them swamping the neighbouring crops. So they're not invasive at all. They're not going to spread and try and take over your garden, but the individual plant itself, once established and happy, can get very big. But it's just a great alternative crop which you could try. So there are a few things which you could be getting going with in your vegetable garden at the moment. And next time you're at Wisley, please do come into the World Food Garden and have a look at what we are getting on with there.
Thanks to Liz Mooney. The next 2 weeks are crucial in my vegetable garden. It's a time to sow tender crops. So that's things that I start indoors to plant out in May. And I'm really, really keen on these plants. I grow a lot of them. So it's courgettes and cucumbers, of course, pumpkins and winter squash, sweet corn, some ornamental gourds to decorate the house in winter. All my hardy plants have come up except my carrots. And my carrots, for some reason, are just not there. I think slugs must have eaten them, so I'm going to have to re-sow. To re-sow, I've got a tip that I sometimes use. I mix a little potting compost with some vermiculite, moisten it, and then mix the seeds in with it and leave them in a plastic container in the airing cupboard until they just begin to show a little bit of white root. And when I plant them in the ground, cover them carefully with soil, and up they come with much less risk than sowing straight in the soil, and I'll catch up a bit on the time that's been lost because of the slug damage. Now from veg to flowers. What's the most unusual place you've spotted a flower in bloom? The rooftop of a 40-foot narrowboat doesn't seem like the most obvious place to start a cut flower garden. But for our next guest, who goes by the moniker Rocker Brings Flowers, it spoke to every part of what she's about. Resourcefulness, sustainability, and feeling free. Let's hear her story.
I remember very specifically the year when I was planting my tulips for the first year. I went for 4,000. That was 2020, so during lockdown. The future looked like either you retrain yourself, which I did at first. I used to work at my friend's lingerie company, so I was making underwear. But I always missed working with flowers. So basically, that's how I decided to open Rocker Brings Flowers. So I basically ordered 4,000 tulips, and it started in a sweet way because I lived in Camberwell at the time. So I was on land. I was the land girl at the time. And people became very community focused. And one of my neighbor introduced me to his neighbor who had this unused space. So I basically decided to, go there, knock on her door. She was very, very flexible. open to the idea of me turning her unused space into like a Dutch field full of flowers and colours. I persuaded her by like showing her some pictures how things could look like, because it was an experiment. I didn't know if that investment is going to be successful. You know, I'd never done it before. But when I was growing up, I remember my neighbour was growing tulips. So I was sort of like surrounded with that idea that you can make something out of nothing. I had this mix of feelings of like being nervous, but also really excited, because I was like, if it's going to work, it's going to be amazing. Then obviously you wait a few months, and the feeling of seeing them poking through was honestly just like, I couldn't compare it with anything else. And for the first 2 years, every time I could see the first buds, I would literally cry. The first time I went to the market, farmer's market, I didn't know how much to bring, you know. What is going to happen? Is anyone going to turn up? But then I realized Camberwell can be incredibly loyal. And the amount of people came to me a year later saying, oh my God, you know, the thought of like getting flowers every week, that was like an event, you know, that was like a destination. I could like go get my cinnamon bun and coffee and beautify my flat with flowers. And that was inspiring me for the whole week. So we were sort of giggling that, oh, we should put flowers as an essential item. You know, it's like bread, eggs and flowers, because it really made a difference to some people. With me, it's not like I plan ahead. Everything develops organically, let's say, right? So whatever happens in my life comes out of need, usually. So I was very happy in Camberwell in that community, but I got a 9 months notice from my landlord, and we had to organize another place to move into. But basically I've realized that, oh, the reality is that I would have to earn much more if I'm gonna find like an average accommodation in London. So it just felt naturally for me to move into the boat. And yeah, I got like a small 40-foot narrow boat, and I've worked really hard for the previous 2 to 3 years, and I did want to open a flower shop. So I thought, what's wiser? Shall I just open a flower shop and spend all my savings on renting some place, which might either work or not? Or shall I just think of my accommodation first? And actually, you know, my heart was broken when I couldn't go ahead with the flower shop. They gave the premises to another bakery. Classic. You know, fair enough. I got my boat instead, and I'm very pleased when you look from a distance that I've done that, because having my own space takes the pressure away. So that, having that sort of extra time for creating, led me to another project. As soon as I got the boat, I was looking at the roof thinking, oh, I don't know how much longer I can like commute to Camberwell, how much longer I can use the garden at my neighbour's. Well, okay, I think I need to build some flower beds for the tulips. So the first year of having a boat, I've decided to go to the timber shop and build my flower beds, which I intended to grow tulips the next year. I've used it as a summer vegetable garden at first, because I've built it, I think, after the tulip season. So like, yeah, summer. And yeah, the next year I've planted 1,000 tulips. The planters are quite big. They are 2 meters long, half a meter wide, and they are about 30 centimeters deep, because I knew like the bulbs need to be planted quite deep, depending on the variety, 10 to 15 centimeters. They should be about 15 centimeters apart, you know, if you want to do it properly and avoid any diseases and stuff. I again took the risk, and luckily there wasn't any outbreak of like tulip fire, and yeah, they grew beautifully. then I'm like, obviously celebrating is beautiful, looks amazing. People still buy, want to talk about it. You know, everyone's curious and people buy from the market. So things are going well. Lots of work, but I like that because you feel alive. So that would be about 2 months of tulips. And then dahlias were amazing because some of the variety would go up to October, right? So about 3 months of that. So I would say I grow for 5 months of the whole year, which is not like even 50% of it. But I still want to support myself and make living out of selling flowers. So I have to go to my wholesalers and get flowers all year round on top of that. So tulips and dahlias were always like a little special period where I could spend less money on going to the wholesalers, but also like be very proud, like I'm fully involved in growing and selling. I thought like I need another project. And is it enough having 4 planters on top of the roof? It is again pushing my luck again, because you are not supposed to have so much weight on top of the roof unless you level it with something at the bottom as well. And also I'm going under the bridges, so anything too tall might get crushed. And, you know, I was a little bit like, fingers crossed. So I have to be careful, but I thought, why not build a greenhouse, right? So then, yes, I thought, oh, let's do it. Let's just get a little tender, little boat, which I can turn into a greenhouse. And this is how it started. I just posted that on one of the boaters groups, like a free cycle or something. And a friend of mine, well, I didn't know that person at the time, but we became good friends after. He was basically getting rid of this boat. And he sent me this picture of her name, and her name was Julie. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with the name. She was like, obviously had this beautiful original name on it. And she was quite spacious and she was lovely and, you know, needed a good scrub. But basically, I could see my next project. So Julie is like a little tender, a small boat. I have a rope attached to my narrow boat, and I am towing her behind me. And when I was growing tomatoes in her last summer, people actually called it tomato because I was towing them. So it was, you know, it was funny. So she actually was made out of fiberglass. Inside it's timber, and I obviously repainted it as well. And the flower beds, there are 2 flower beds on both sides, and there is like a little pathway in between. The idea was to build the sides, see-through sides, but make it still quite pretty because I wanted to make it look more like a conservatory. Yeah, there was a lot of thinking before I was doing things, but I was just going for it, hoping for the best. And she turned out beautiful. I think so. And I got a lot of confirmation because people always stop, take pictures and want to have a chat about it. And then I posted her on TikTok last year and she had like 1 million views overnight. They celebrated because they just say, oh, I never seen anything like that before. So yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a joy. It's a joy to have Julie behind and tow her behind me and, you know, in the summer, open the door. And it's just like a space where you can like sit and look at your garden and like forget about anything else. I can switch off and just like enjoy. I think it gave me a lot of purpose, which is crucial for feeling alive. And life can be difficult and it's not easy for me, for sure. Like, I found life hard. But I try to beautify it as possible and I try to stay really connected with my surroundings and my reality and growing and being part of this process and knowing that you planted that seed or you planted that bulb or that tuber and then you looked after it and it paid you back with beautiful blossom and then somebody got it, paid you the money. That person appreciates that what you've created and also supports you as a person to like keep on going. And, you know, it's like a beautiful, I feel like it's a really beautiful process to take part in, you know, so I feel very fulfilled in that way. But don't get me wrong, there are really difficult days as well when you doubt a lot of things and stuff. But again, the more experience you get and create good memories, the better you feel about what you do. So, you know, make space for something better to come. So that's what I try to operate on, those principles.
There are so many things to be inspired by there. I just love that Rocker has the guts to ask a friend of a friend if she could borrow some garden space in order to grow her first batch of 4,000 bulbs. A risk, but worth it. And from that interaction to the way she sells direct to her community, Rocker's charm and passion really come through. If you'd like to see photos of her amazing narrowboat, the floating greenhouse she tows behind, and the butcher's bike that she sells huge bunches from at farmers' markets, you can follow her on Instagram and TikTok, at Rocker, that's R-O-K-A, bring us flowers. We'll also link to her in the show notes. I must say, a canal boat's pretty much a first for me. I've seen a lot of little nurseries over the years where people have, in their spare time, or as an enlarged hobby, call it what you like, have set up nurseries in all sorts of places. Farmyards, roadside verges, on top of their garage, all sorts of things. And it's a really nice way of doing things. But I think the secret of Rocker's success is her brilliant following on social media. That's an interesting thought. It's a good way to market yourself. We continue now with more thoughts on flowers, and this time how focusing in on one particular colour can inspire a different approach to design. Let's head to the Newton Somerset.
My name is Joe and I work at the Newt in Somerset, and my main area is the colour gardens. It's a set of four rectangular shaped gardens with a cobbly path meandering through, and they're divided by a beautiful hazel fence. There's a green garden, a red garden, a blue garden and a white garden which leads up to the hotel. Historically, in the late 80s, a couple called Sandra and Norrie Pope came here, and the gardens were quite run down, and they set about transforming the garden into beautiful colour gardens. And they created an amazing garden in the walled garden, which is like a D-shaped parabola, which is south-facing. And apparently, the gardens were absolutely stunning, and they brought in guests like artists and garden designers. And they also wrote a book called Colour by Design, which is really well respected. And unfortunately, that garden was flattened by different owners in the past. So we've decided to recreate those gardens in a slightly different area. And the idea is, it's like a monochromatic planting. So in each garden, say red, there'll be all the different hues of red, a bit like an artist's palette. So we've got deep scarlets, vivid reds leading through to crimson and lighter reds. So they really focused on one colour, and it's a bit like a symphony. You have to develop the harmonies and build the mood. And I think they saw gardening as like a really artistic expression, and they were into their music as well. So now that we're sitting in the red garden, I'm going to talk about my favourite plant combination, and that is Crocosmia lucifer and Stipa gigantea. So I was really struck by this combination in the summer mornings. The red Crocosmia is so vibrant and it shows its flowers horizontally to you. The flowers are incredible enough as they are, but the buds are yellow and they go into a green and then a red. It's absolutely amazing. So they're there kind of showing off, look, I'm here really red. And then behind them is the kind of strappy green foliage which kind of quivers in the wind. So that's amazing on its own. And then behind that is the Stipa gigantea, which is towers above. And its common name is golden oats, which is what the flowers look like. So there's like lots of little seed heads shimmering in the wind. And in the morning, the light comes through the trees and it just catches, it's like they're glowing. It's just amazing. And also when it's rained or if there's any dew, all the droplets form on the seed heads and it's just absolutely stunning. So those two plants in combination, it's just wow. And that's that moment I have where I just love working here and I think, oh, I'm looking after this beautiful garden. It's just amazing. I've learned a lot of things working in this garden. One thing is that if you have a herbaceous border going into spring, don't be so worried if you've got space between your perennials, because you can grow plenty of annuals to fill the space, and that's a real trick. And if you plant it wisely enough, you could probably get a huge range of colour from like April through to October. There's so many combinations. I think the best thing to do is go to a good seed company and just look through their catalogue and think, I'll try that this year, or that might go well with what I've already got on the border. So I've got some really interesting zinnias coming. One's coral red and the other one's like a deep claret. And it'll be really interesting to see how they blend in with all the other plantings. I've also got a Nacella tenuissima in there as well, which is called Mexican feather grass. And it's like a blonde buff, flowers like splaying everywhere. And I can just imagine the deep, vivid reds dotted through those grasses. So I'm excited about that. I plant things like cosmos. They've got a really long flowering period. And if you keep deadheading them, they just give and give. And they come in a variety of colours. I love poppies, just classic poppies. I sow them directly on the ground. In the green garden, I've got some Nicotiana langsdorffii. It's a tobacco plant, and it's full of these small, kind of bell-shaped green flowers. And it should provide like a really big display of green kind of jingling bells. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And actually, when I first came here, I was a bit sceptical about the green garden because it's not that easy to find green flowering plants. But as the garden grew, it's actually one of my favourites now. The vibe is loose perennial planting, lots of different textures, lots of different greens as well. So you've got a silvery green of the Artemisia, and then it runs through to vivid greens of the hellebores. And there's also some fatsias at the back, which is just kind of a lush tropical vibe. So it's a real mixture. A curiosity in the garden is that we have a green rose. It's called Rosa chinensis viridiflora. And it's been bred so that it doesn't have petals, it has sepals, and they form the petals of the flower. So people see it and they think, well, that's a bit unusual. It's kind of a bit like Marmite, and I always point it out on our garden tours and get a really mixed response. It's quite interesting to see people react to it. They're really fun to play with. Another interesting thing about this garden is that we have apprentices here, and they actually designed this garden a couple of years ago. So they've done such a good job. I absolutely love it, and well done to them. One thing that I hope people take away from when they visit this garden is to explore the different hues of one colour. So for example, in the red garden, if you're going to plant like a really vibrant red poppy, why not try growing like a different shade along with it and really sink into that colour and just expand your knowledge of colour, because it is really important in the garden. And also think about form and texture. There's so many different plant combinations in these gardens. There's loads of ideas you can take home and try it in your garden at home. You can be really creative in horticulture. There's no set rules, you just grow what you like. Experiment with colour and enjoy.
Thanks there to Joe Dransfield. The Newt in Somerset is an RHS partner garden, which means members get in for free at selected times. We've included details in our show notes if you'd like to visit. Of course, the one colour planting scheme that one always thinks about is the white garden at Sissinghurst. And that's certainly a fine example of how white or a single colour can be used to a wonderful effect. In your own garden, colour can be quite perplexing, but if in doubt, plant up a container or a small border with one plant all of the same colour or two plants of a very similar colour. It's fun to experiment in this way. That's almost it for today's episode. Before I go, I wanted to share a few things I've been up to in the garden this week. I've been planting my potatoes. This is a Lake District, so I don't plant potatoes before the middle of April. And I've also been sowing the last of the broad beans and the peas. And indoors, I've been starting some French beans. They're very important tender crops to me, and this hot, dry district suits them perfectly. I've been a bit overambitious and grown far too many cover crops over winter, so it's really hard work clearing away the ryegrass and clover that's been feeding the soil all winter. I'm going to have to be a bit less ambitious next winter. And all my potted bulbs are flowering, many are finished, so I'm feeding those and I'll plant them out in the garden as soon as the foliage has begun to die down. But I've got a lot of shopping to look forward to. Many of my plants died in the winter before last when it was very cold, and I was disheartened, so I didn't buy any more tender plants. But this year, feeling slightly more heartened, and with the pain of loss receding, I'm going to be off to the garden centre and buy some tender plants. I've already bought some Thunbergia alata, or Black-Eyed Susan. It's one of my very favourite climbing tender plants. Remember, if you have any questions on your garden or horticultural matters generally that you'd like addressed on the podcast, send us your queries to podcasts@rhs.org.uk. Next time, we'll be bringing you highlights from the RHS Urban Show, which is happening this weekend in Manchester. There's a big focus on houseplants and gardening in small and urban spaces. Tickets are available from the RHS website, and we'll leave a link in the notes. But for now, from me, Guy Barter, thanks for listening and happy gardening.